Thank you, Reverend Lisa. Where'd the reverend come from? Because we have a Reverend Lisa, that's why. Those two things go together for me. And now it is our treasure to be able to experience, I don't have your title in front of me, but the modern day pilgrimage from Reverend Lisa. Just impressed on the brain, Reverend Terry and Reverend Eileen. And Reverend Terry, I believe, Reverend Eileen will speak first. Wonderful.
Good morning. Good morning. It's nice to be with you. I always enjoy coming back, and of course, I always come in costume. That light, just can we tone that light down right there? It's very difficult. Yes, thank you. Terry and I have traveled many, many times together and taken many pilgrimages together. We've done Israel and Scotland and Medjugorje. And this last year, we chose to do Egypt together for 2 weeks over the Thanksgiving holiday. Just so you know, the current population of Egypt is 99 million people, and 85% of that is Muslim, and 15% is Coptic Christian. Now, Cairo, which is the largest city and the capital within Egypt, has 22 million people that live there. And I want to let you know that only 7% of the country is actually inhabited. So all of the populations are in great areas. Driving, I'm giving David signals by touching my nose. Carol Burnett wagged her tail. Driving here is truly insane. In fact, there are three lanes on the freeway in which they make into six and seven lanes. And the crazy part about it is that during rush hour, there are people walking on the freeways to sell people coffee. You know? And there's two more pictures of the, flip through those, David, and show the two. You can see, and they're, when their cars are there, or they stack them up, you can see the hay. And I love this picture because it's right between the two pyramids. And, you know, it really kind of is insane there. Now, one of the things that we have, there are large developments of apartment complexes, or that was the night that I was leaving at 10 o'clock at night. Go ahead with the next one, David. The apartment complexes that are there are never, ever completed. And there's a major reason for that, because you see, they can go through and they can complete the initial 5, 6, 7, 8 floors, but the top 1 or 2 floors are never completed. And the reason for that is the government cannot tax an incomplete building. Don't you wish that would happen here in America? We could leave half our roof off or something. But these incomplete floors, they still inhabit them up to the point in which they're no longer complete. Now, additionally, space is at a premium there. And what would happen is they would take their patio areas that they had, and these were jam-packed with washers and dryers and chicken coops. And this was about 6 floors up, was the chicken coop that was on the patio there. And I kind of was reminded that how spacious our American homes are, how spacious our yards are, and yet we continue to what? Fill them up with stuff. We just continue to pile them in, using whatever space is available, much like they did within a small area. Now, Terry and I took 3 airplane rides within a 24-hour period of time to get from Sacramento to Cairo. And we went intentionally a day early so that we had the time to adjust from that long trip and the 9-hour time difference that is between California and Egypt. And because of our early arrival, the very first night we were there, we made arrangements to take a tour the very next day. And in that tour, we were able to go to Ben Ezra Synagogue, which is the oldest synagogue still remaining within Egypt. And it was very interesting there because until the war broke out in 1960 between Egypt and Israel, the land was still fairly plentiful with Hebrews that lived there. And at that point, they were forced to leave Egypt. And so now you have very few Jewish folk that live within Egypt. We also went to the cave site of where Joseph and Mary and the baby Jesus escaped from. And there was also a watering hole there that they had that they used that they would draw their water from. We furthermore went to where they feel that the Pharaoh's sister discovered the baby baby Moses in the reed basket on the Nile. And the reason why they were able to make that assumption was because hidden underneath all the brush, they ultimately discovered it was like a large brick or stone patio that they made the assumption that this was where the Pharaoh's castle or home was and that this was where Moses was discovered. Now, one of the places that Terry and I went that day with our guide that we were most touched by was by the Coptic Christian Church. Now, the word Coptic is a corruption of an Arabic word, and I'm going to try and say it here, Qibeti, and which is derived from Greek, and actually Cop, C-O-P-T, means Egyptian. And so when we say Coptic Church, it means Egyptian church. And according to tradition, St. Mark was sent by Jesus after his death to Egypt to introduce Christianity to the Egyptian. And by the 4th century AD, Christianity was the official spirituality or religion of Egypt. Now, we were unable to take any pictures inside the church, and so Terry and I kind of hung at the door with our iPhones and clicked away as best we could. Now, the church itself is known as the Hanging Church because it was built on top of an old Roman fortress of Babylon. And this is there's a tremendous amount of symbolism within the Coptic churches. And the ceilings that you'll see here is actually like Moses' ark turned upside down. So the insides of the ceilings or the churches are supposed to be symbolized of Noah's ark. And and there were also, on the pulpit, 13 columns that held the pulpit up for the minister. And one of them was representative of Jesus, and then the other were in two columns each because supposedly the disciples were sent out in twos to convert the world to Christianity. And as the columns would get darker and darker, and towards the back, there was one that was not black, but it was very dark gray, and that symbolized Judah. And the intricate carvings on the doors and the pews and the walls all represented the cross, and the triangles around the cross were symbolic of the Trinity. Personally, I had always wanted to visit Egypt because of the blend of so many cultures. And of course, as a child growing up in the First Christian Church here in Chico, I certainly heard all the stories about Moses and being discovered, as well as about baby Jesus and being sent to Egypt to survive. And so it was, for me, this was one of the countries I had always wanted to go to. And I was further learned as we got there how much all of our spiritualities overlap. And one of the things that happened there, of course, is that they were ruled for numerous years by kings and queens who were actually the intermediaries between the mythical gods and the subjects in the land. And there are many, many myths about several gods, so many that you have to have a book to be able to understand them all. And then, of course, we have the Jewish religion that was there for so long. And remember, they were the slaves until Moses delivered them. And ultimately, the Arabs arrived from and brought Islam to this country in approximately 700 AD. Now, remember, the Greeks had a great influence on the land when they arrived in 7th century BC. And it continued on through the rule of Alexander, who was there in 300 BC, until the Romans arrived in 30 BC. So you can begin to see that wherever you go, you've got this influence of Egyptian architecture, Greek architecture, Roman architecture throughout the whole entire country. And all of these influences were on displays in the temples, in the museums, and in architecture as well as the cities. And we would visit an ancient temple and could note that creation was begun by an Egyptian rule, and yet the columns might have been finished off by the Greeks or the Roman influence, depending upon when it was. And then you'd further go in, and here would be a cross carved into the side of one of the temple walls, or a painting up about 40 feet of Jesus and the Last Supper. Ancient Egypt religion was a highly complex system involving a great numbers of deities. If you can think of the Greeks and all of their gods, that kind of gives you an idea of what it was like there. And the deities were originally based on all of the natural world. And as the gods evolved into cohesive personalities, they were done so based upon the locality where the god came from in Egypt. And their creation story, for example, actually has three different versions based upon where within Egypt it came from. Christianity and Judaism share one creation story, and Islam has its own version, which is very similar to our Bible. One of the most universal myths is of Isis. Has everybody heard of Isis at some point or time or another? Not that Isis. The goddess Isis. And Terry and I both came home. Oh, you can pass that one up. That's one of the gods, actually. Terry and I both came home with drawings of Isis on papyrus, which is the paper that they actually made. And she is the Egyptian goddess of rebirth, empowerment, and femininity. And she was the first daughter of Gib, god of earth and nuts, and she was born on the first day between the first years of creation. Isis taught her people the skill of reading and agriculture and was worshipped as the goddess of medicine and wisdom. Now, future female deities or goddesses in all kinds of cultures, we're all patterned after Isis. Ultimately, there I got it out. She was the personification of the complete female and was called the one who is all. Some of her other titles include Mother of Life, Crone of Death, and Goddess of Magic. As the myth goes, Isis loved her brother, Osiris. Now remember, these are gods, and he was the king of earth. Ultimately, the two of them were married, but this really ticked off their other brother, Set. And Set was so jealous and so ticked and so angry that he ultimately killed Osiris. And he went because he wanted Isis to never be able to find him ever again. He took Osiris's body and he chopped it up in 14 pieces and he spread it throughout all of Egypt so the crocodiles would eat him. But Isis was not going to allow this to happen. And so she had 7 scorpions and they went with her, and she was able to collect 13 pieces of Isis. Now, this was real important, but the one part that she could not find of him was his manly part. Now, unable to find it, she decided to fashion a new one. So she took gold and wax and put that together, stuck it on him. And this rite actually invented the rite of embalming. But this story is even more important because after the creation of Orisis, what she did is she ultimately put on sparrowhawk wings, and she went out and she hovered over him and recreated him, and he came back to life for her, and she was impregnated. And in that process, they gave birth to a new son. And what is interesting even more about this story is the fact that this is the first recorded virgin birth, which is extremely important. And I think he was the god of Nut, and I'm being very serious about that. Not Ammon's, but the god of Nut. I'm sorry, what? Nut, that's it, right. The god of Nut. No, I still, you know, when he was telling us that, the god of Nut? Okay, anyway. Now, Isis had her own temple, and this is the temple at sunrise. And they got us up at about 3:30 in the morning one day when we were actually on a cruise on the Nile. They bussed us out to boats and then took us out to the island in which her temple was. And the interesting part about this temple was they had dammed up a section of the river, and the temple was actually all completely and totally underwater. And they went back in the 1960s, and piece by piece, they numbered every single piece of the temple that was underwater and brought it back out and put it on an island that they had created because they wanted to save this temple. It was so important. And pilgrims from all over Egypt would venture there to worship Isis. And one of the important things about it was there was a place that was called the Holy of Holies. And this room or area was not originally lit. You can tell by the pictures they've gone in and put wooden floor down. They've lit it up now. But it was not originally lit. You went into this when it was dark. And it was believed that the light that came into that room was actually from the light of the pilgrims that were there to worship Isis. I was reminded at the time of what Ernest Holmes told us, Dr. Holmes, all men receive some light, and this light is always the same light. This is one nature diffused throughout all nature, one God incarnate in all people. This was so evident in Egypt. And we know that the light comes from within each of us by means of our faith. And indeed, regardless of our spiritual beliefs, we are all one. Temples were centers of religious life in ancient Egypt. Now, Egyptians really believed a lot in duality. It was about fertility or famine or barren. It was about life or death, order or chaos. Everything in their life was based upon this duality. And so they built temples dedicated to their gods to help them deal with these extremes in the duality. And the god could be either male or female, but one of the interesting points about it was if you were a male god, you actually had an aura that was female. And if you were a female god, you had an aura that was male. And the temples were the center of every settlement and served as the storehouses of divine power. Each temple had many rooms, many hallways, open spaces for the pilgrims to come to. And the beginning of each temple was, however, known as the sanctuary. Remember, that's over 6,000 or 7,000 years ago. And yet to this day, we call our rooms of worship sanctuaries. Priests maintained the temple and numerous citizens were employed there. Thus, the temples became economic and political powers. They became the town center. They became the schools. They became the medical facilities wherever they were located. And while the priests were responsible for the temples, the kings were the ones that were actually the intermediaries between the mortal and the divine. Regardless of the temples that we visited, and we saw 10 of the 13 that were in Egypt, and we could not see the other three because they are under renovation right now. All of the temples were filled with hieroglyphics. They were everywhere. And hieroglyphics actually dates back to 32 BC and is the oldest known writing system in existence in the world. Hieroglyph means sacred carved letters. And the writing was a decorative art and used in ritual pictures to convey a given story. The text can be read from right to left or left to right. It just depends upon which way the bird's pointing, which was very interesting. So as we would stand there and study it, our guide would say, okay, we're going to read it this way, or we're going to read it this way. It was a little bit confusing. The intricate symbols were carved on the wall to tell the story of the gods and the kings. And of course, the kings wanted their story and their accomplishments recorded for all to see. And several times we would go in and we would see a king's face that had been obliterated, or portions of a story that had been obliterated, because the coming king that came after the one that was just had this temple made in their honor didn't want anybody to know the story of that king because their story was supposed to be better. And while the kings called their stories accurate, let's face it, there was a little bit of fudging here and there. It was important to be viewed, as far as they were concerned, it was important to be viewed as doing good and seeking their good. And of course, those of us in religious science understand and know that our good is God. The kings did not totally understand that often they got caught up in their own story. Sound familiar? And the stories that had to show that everything they did was for a good reason. They were extremely important since the kings, when they died, they went to the underworld, and it was in the underworld that they were judged whether they were a good king or a bad king. And the interesting way that they made that judgment about them was they took out their heart and they put it on a scale and they measured the heart against the feather. And if the heart was as light as the feather, they had been a good king. How light would our hearts be today? Would they be light as a feather? Most of us remember the pyramids from Hollywood, rendition of the Ten Commandments. Remember, that was just on recently for the umpteenth million time. And there are many stories of how and why the pyramids were made and put into existence. Currently, they've discovered 118 pyramids in Egypt. And if one knows anything about astronomy, it becomes evident that the pyramids were actually built based upon the constellations. And of course, the most famous of the pyramids are those that are located near Cairo, right next to our hotel that we stayed in. And we were able to enter the largest of the pyramids one morning at 6 a.m., and they only allow 10 or 100 people to enter the pyramid each and every day. And the reason for that is because we breathe. And as we breathe, bring moisture into the pyramid. And what they soon discovered was all the people that they were allowing to come into the pyramids brought so much moisture in by their breath, it was deteriorating the inside of the pyramid. And so they narrowed that down to 100, only allow that many, and of course they've got fan systems going in there. We visited two chambers, the queen and the king's chamber within it, and most recently they discovered a third chamber. Now, the Giza or Gaza pyramids, which were the ones that we visited, were built between 2680 and 2560 BC. The largest blocks that created the pyramids weighed between a half a ton and 15 tons. That's like 30,000 pounds. And it just boggles my mind how they were able in ancient Egypt to put those blocks up there. And on top of that, every single block was tongue and grooved. The pyramid's base, the one that we went into, covered 13 acres. And the sides of the pyramid rose up 20 or 51 degrees and were over 755 feet long. And originally, this pyramid was 481 feet tall, but it's been sinking, so it's not quite as tall as what it originally was. Now, pyramids did not stand alone. There were lots of groupings with the pyramids. There were smaller pyramids for the queen, smaller pyramids for the priests, for the other family members. And there were temples and chapels and other tombs and sphinxes that were there within this major complex. And these were built by skilled workers who were paid a wage, not the Hebrew slaves that we all assumed to be. Yes, the Hebrews were slaves, but this was important. This was the king's pyramid. And so only people who could revere the king were allowed to help create it. And ancient Egypts believed that when kings died, part of their spirit, or their ka, as they called it, remained with his body. So when he was buried with food. He was buried with vessels, with furniture, with anything that would make his journey to the underlife more comfortable. And also that food and those items were given out to the priests, the officials, and the relatives. When they died, it was believed that they had it. Interesting of note is one time they went in and discovered seeds that were approximately 5,000 years old, and they planted those seeds, and guess what? They grew. One of the fascinating things about pyramids is that they can be found in both the Mayan culture, Mesopotamia, and even China. No matter where we turn, we are all interconnected. Our cultures are one. Remember, this was a very spiritual area, and the priests lived nearby and were adjacent to the Sphinx, which is a very, very large area. And there were lots of like small swimming pools, because originally at this time the Nile came by the pyramids and it has reshifted itself. But what I began to see the similarities between that and what I saw when I was in Israel with the Essenes is they also had many little tiny swimming pools. But really they weren't swimming pools, they were baths, because before you could go into the Holy of Holies, before you could go worship, you had to cleanse your body, not once, but multiple times. No journey to Egypt would be complete without a camel. Our guide explained to us that the camels actually were afraid of dogs. And I said, you gotta be kidding me. Look at how big a camel is. And you're going to tell me that they're afraid of a dog? And he said, now I want you to stop and realize something. He said, you realize that the human eye is shaped like this. However, the camel's eye is shaped like this, or a spoon. It's concave. And so he said, whatever the camel sees is larger than what he is. And so he lives out of fear. And I chuckled to myself, because how often has my vision been off and my view of something or my perception of something has been incorrect or distorted, just like how the camels see. I truly didn't want this to be like a travel log today for you, even though there were lots more pictures Terry and I could have included. And how do I melt down 14 days into 20 to 25 minute sharing? But what Kathy Ann Lewis, who is was the organizer of this trip, and she's the pastor or the minister in Seattle, CSL. This is about her sixth or seventh time that she's gone to Egypt. The first night we were there all together, she read the following. You are a Christian because you believe in Jesus. You are a Jew because you believe in all the prophets, including Moses. You are a Muslim because you believe in Muhammad as a prophet, and you are a Sufi because you believe in the universal teaching of God's love. You are really none of those, but you are all of those because you believe in God. And once you believe in God, there is no other religion. Once you divide yourself off from religions, you're separate from your fellow man. That's from the Illuminated Prayer. The journey was such an incredible blend of so many spiritual moments that weren't Christian, Muslim, Jewish, or pagan spirituality. It reminded me once again of how we are all one. And as soon as we lay aside our fears, our resentments, and the needs to be right about our religion or our beliefs, our world will be a better place as we embrace each other as true brothers and sisters. This is the truth in my life, and this is the truth in yours. Terry was actually my travel companion. However, she had her own travel companion, and it wasn't me. And so I'm going to turn the remainder of our present over to Terry and Flat Stanley.
Thank you, Eileen. I learned more. So I travel because I want to meet people and experience other cultures, other countries. And as Eileen said, when I travel, I learn rapidly. We are all one. And so this is Flat Stanley. This is actually Flat Stanley 2. So I'm going to share that story with you. My grandson Jordan is in second grade, and Flat Stanley is a tool used by many teachers. And they send him home with the kids, and then they give him to whoever's doing something. I mean, Flat Stanley might go to the beach or to the market or wherever. But I was going to Egypt when I got Flat Stanley. My daughter-in-law said, do you want to take him? I go, yes, I do. So this gentleman here is who the story's about. I lost Flat Stanley. And I was mortified because I could not recreate him. And so one of the women on the trip said, well, they have an office here we were in a 5-star hotel, there's an office, they'll help you. So this man, who's a devout Islam, I went in and I asked him, can I give you a picture of Flat Stanley? Can you make it bigger and can we recreate him? And I explained it all to him, and he has two young children, and he was really excited to help me. So he goes, go through your pictures and find a picture. So I found a picture that we weren't touching Flat Stanley. So I found this picture, and I said, can we use this picture? And he got really quiet, and he looked at me, and he said, that's the Holy Quran. And I went, well, we meant no disrespect. We happened to be in a mosque. There was a book. We opened it up to teach children that there's other writing and other ways people see and live. And he goes, can you read it? And I went, no. Do you know what it says? No. But I still think it's a wonderful illustration of the beauty of your language, which happens to be upside down in the picture because Stanley was, either Stanley had to be upside down or the book. So he stood there for a minute. Now when I got home, I was told you can be beheaded for desecrating the Quran, which is basically what it could have been taken as I did. But he stood there and he started to read to me. When you read the Quran in Arabic, to me, it sounds like singing or chanting, but it doesn't sound like you're just reading words. So I closed my eyes, and I just let these words wash over me. And when he was done, he looked at me, and it took me a minute to kind of come back. And I said, that was the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. Thank you. He goes, do you know what I said? I said, I have no idea. It doesn't really matter. It was the way it made me feel. So he explained to me the story, and I can't remember at this moment which one it was, but the Quran is basically the Old Testament of the Bible. There may be some changes in words or a little here and there, but it's basically the same book. And this was one to do with Moses. So that's Flat Stanley. And the other pictures they rushed through, Flat Stanley became a fabulous way to meet people because we would say, we have this, and we'd explain it. Can we take a picture of you with Flat Stanley? And we have Flat Stanley everywhere in Egypt. So I went from Egypt to Jordan for 5 days without Eileen. And I went with a woman on the tour who I didn't know. And I thought that I was joining a tour in Jordan. And it turned out it was this other woman, myself, and our tour guide and our driver. So for 5 days in Jordan, we sat in a car together, drove all over the country of Jordan, and talked. And we talked about politics, worldviews, religion. And I came home enthralled with the Quran because I wanted to understand. This was a highlight for me because no one had to be right in that car. We all just were talking for understanding and learning. And we did some of that in Egypt, but there were 80 of us on the tour in Egypt. So it was harder to get one-on-one time, although the man that owned the company, him and his family traveled with us. And they were all willing to answer questions. But to have that 5 days and to be able to talk, tour guides have master's degrees. They have to understand every religion, all the cultures, and put it all together to answer questions for people from all over the world. So just a couple more things. This is called a galabeya, or caftan. It is the traditional dress in Egypt. They fitted us and gave us each one as a gift. And this is their mala. Thank you, Lisa. I never bought one when I was there. This mala has 33 beads. It's a small one. Their traditional malas are 99 beads. And when you pray the mala, you pray the attributes of Allah, our God. So, most gracious, merciful, king, holy, peace, omnipotent, omnipresent, powerful, strong, supreme, creator, evolver. So, I actually like praying the mala because to me, I'm just worshiping God. And then we did prepare a slideshow. Some of the slides you will have already seen. But the music to the slideshow is actually someone reading a portion of the Quran. It's chapter 113. It's called The Dawn. And this part is to teach man how to seek refuge in Allah and how to be take himself to Allah when he is in his dark hours. So the dawn is the awakening into God. So I will conclude that, and David will show our slideshow. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Wal-fajr. وليال عشر والشفع والوتر والليل إذا يسر هل في ذلك قسم لذي حجر ألم تر كيف فعل ربك بعاد إرم ذات العماد التي لم يخلق مثلها في البلاد وثمود الذين جابوا الصخر بالواد وفرعون ذي الأوتاد الذين طغوا في البلاد فأكثروا فيها الفساد فصب عليهم ربك سوط عذاب إن ربك لبالمرصاد فأما الإنسان إذا ما ابتلاه ربه فأكرمه ونعمه فيقول ربي أكرمن وأما إذا ما ابتلاه فقدر عليه رزقه فيقول ربي أهانن كلا بل لا تكرمون اليتيم ولا تحاضون على طعام المسكين وتأكلون التراث أكلا لما وتحبون المال حبا جما كلا إذا دكت الأرض دكا دكا وجاء ربك والملك صفا صفا وجيء يومئذ بجهنم يومئذ يتذكر الإنسان وأنى له الذكرى يقول يا ليتني قدمت لحياتي فيومئذ لا يعذب عذابه أحد ولا يوثق وثاقه أحد يا أيتها النفس المطمئنة ارجعي إلى ربك راضية مرضية فادخلي في عبادي وادخلي جنتي.